Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and a good one this week. LPGA Commissioner Mike Wan joins the show. He was on before, a little bit different this time, considering everything that's happened over the last few months with COVID and with quarantine and now the LPGA Tour returning this week at Inverness in Toledo, Ohio, for the LPGA Drive-On Championship. This is their return. The LPGA Tour, of course, has been back for a few weeks, but this is going to be exciting. I mean, a chance to see the LPGA back on one of the most unbelievable golf courses that I've had a chance to call events on. We had the Junior Amateur last year that Preston Summerhays won in dramatic fashion at Inverness. And of course, a lot of history at that golf course, but I was blown away when I got to Toledo for the first time and had a chance to drive around this golf course in a golf cart. I think I FaceTimed Andy Johnson of the Fried Egg on about the fourth hole and just said, "Hey, this is as good as I think it is, right?" And he said, "Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's one of those golf courses that I feel like if everything wasn't able to happen somewhere, say a U.S. Open was in San Francisco, or you know, a PGA Championship was in Vermont and some natural disaster happened, I feel like you could go to Inverness the next day. The golf course is long, the rough is thick, and it is an unbelievable place with some great finishing holes. So excited to watch and excited for Mike to join. I mean, just a great conversation about everything he's gone through. You know, we talk about this on the pod. The LPGA Tour was dealing with COVID in January, you know, when they had to cancel some events in Asia. And so they were really the first ones that had to take on the challenges that we've seen over the last few months across all sports and across society in general. And so Mike has obviously kind of firsthand experience on what to do and what's been going down, and he shares that with us. So hope you enjoy the chat with Mike. I surely did. Quickly, if you haven't checked out Get a Grip, it's my other podcast with Max Homa, of course, of the PGA Tour. Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. And Max had a great week this past week at 3M. So jump on. We recorded on Sunday, and it's up now anywhere you get your podcast. Give it a listen. Max shares some unbelievable perspective about, you know, a few weeks of struggles, missing cuts by one shot, getting down on himself, his attitude not being where he wanted it, and then flipping it this past week and really trying to approach the week, the event, the holes, the shots completely differently. And of course, that worked out as he finished tied for third. So hope you guys are enjoying that podcast. We've got another Clubhouse this week with the Korda sisters, with both Korda sisters, that will probably drop Thursday morning. So just because you're getting a Clubhouse early in the week, don't think that that's stopping us, because we're going to have another one with a couple of guests on Thursday, which will be awesome. You know, Nelly Korda now second in the world. So she has quickly moved up the ranks at a very, very young age. Excited to chat with them about not just growing up together and competing, but what it's like now to be two of the best players in the world that are sisters. It's a very, very unique story. So that'll be exciting. And again, that'll probably be Thursday morning on your telephones when the podcast drops. So check out and look for that. Okay, that's enough for me. Let's get to the pod. And we welcome back into the Clubhouse Mike Wan, the LPGA Commissioner. You can follow him on Twitter at LPGA Commish. And Mike, I just want to start. LPGA returns this week in Toledo. You just picked the dog track, man. Inverness, you know, one of the best golf courses in the country. I was lucky enough to get a chance to call the U.S. Junior there last year when Summerhays won. That place is just unbelievable. And it feels, and I know you're not there yet, but it feels like a major championship venue. And I can only imagine this week is going to feel majory for everybody getting back to golf.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an Ohioan, so I went to school in Ohio. I know Inverness. And it was funny, one of the players called me. She was from Europe during our break here. And when I announced Inverness, she goes, "Well, that's not fair." And I said, "What do you mean that's not fair?" She goes, "How am I going to not come back and play Inverness, especially with Solheim Cup 21 taking place there?" So I didn't mean it to be unfair, but I did want it to be special. You know, we've all sat for a long time, and I wanted the return to feel different and unique right from the beginning. It'll be cool to show via TV two different Inverness golf clubs. I mean, one's going to be no fans, no pro-ams, you know, only a really small handful of volunteers. So Inverness, like you'd see it at a member guest, you know, with no build out. And then a year from now, over Labor Day weekend, you'll see Inverness with 150,000 fans and a lot of painted face and singing and dancing going on. So we'll see the same course twice in the next year, but in very different circumstances.
Yeah, I'm not really sure people know this, but I'm going to guess you're the first commissioner that really had to deal with COVID. I mean, going back to January, you had events in Asia that were canceled. And then, of course, that was how things started to roll out in other sports. We saw everything get canceled at one point, and then we obviously have seen sports struggle to get back. Considering you were dealing with this pandemic well before other commissioners had to kind of face it on, did you get approached by other commissioners asking you how you handled it? Is there like a text chain that you guys are all on? How does that work in terms of how you discuss your sport and what you're doing with the LPGA Tour, with not just the PGA Tour, but possibly the NBA, MLB, other sports organizations out there?
Yeah, you're right. We were talking coronavirus before it was really being discussed here in America. I guess it was late January. We were on our way to Australia. The first time I got an email about it from one of our tournament groups in Thailand and Singapore and said, we need to talk about coronavirus. And I've been honest with you, I had to Google coronavirus. I wasn't sure what they were talking about. And we started getting on the phone, and the more people we talked to and the more regions, we realized we were dealing with something that was really, I would be honest with you, when we canceled our events in February, we canceled them more from what we didn't know and right. how we didn't like the answer to our question. I remember one health official saying to me, if somebody in your tour were to get the virus while you're here, we'll simply quarantine you in your hotel for, back then they said 21 days. And I remember saying, you know, quarantine is kind of an interesting word. Maybe something's lost in translation. I think quarantine is something very military, like locked in a tent. And he goes, no, same thing. That's what we mean. I said, well, how would you quarantine a tour? And they said, well, we'd actually keep you in your hotel for 3 weeks and we'd test you. And at the end of those 3 weeks, if nobody was sick, we'd let you move on to your next city. And I said, you know, if we were quarantined in a hotel in Thailand for 3 weeks, I mean, that'd be international news. And literally maybe a month later, it was our first, cruise ship coronavirus. And then we started hearing about these other quarantines. So we canceled Thailand, Singapore, and China pretty early in the year. And, you know, and then even when we did that, I remember thinking, well, it's too bad we're going to miss Asia in the spring this year, but we'll be good to go in Phoenix and LA. When we get back, we'll just start up our season. And of course, by the time Phoenix and LA rolled around, the virus was no longer just over there, but a global challenge. So yeah, it was unique. And we definitely talked to a few other tours. Tom Tennis had been in Thailand at a similar time for us. So our first dialogue was with the WTA and some of the folks from the Tennis Association. And then, yeah, as things became more and more evident in the U.S., it became a closer knit group. I mean, I wouldn't tell you we spend a lot of time with the NBA or Major League Soccer or the NFL, but in the middle of this virus, we were sharing more information than certainly we've ever shared in my 11 years as commissioner.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things where you're always consuming information from whomever out there's talking about it, and you're trying your best to take the good ideas from Jay and the PGA Tour and the ideas maybe you didn't love from them and some stuff that Major League Baseball's done well or maybe Major League Baseball hasn't done well. I mean, you mentioned 11 years, and I was going to bring that up a little bit later. You've been with the LPGA Tour since 2010. There's no reason for me to even ask if this is the hardest thing you've had to go through, but I do wonder how much are things changing? How fluid is the situation day to day? And even in your Sports Business Journal op-ed that you wrote that was great, I'll post that on Twitter when we post this episode. You know, you said there have been 10 versions of the schedule that you've gone through and changed. I bet that number grows each and every day.
Yeah, I mean, March, April, and May was a crazy time. I mean, you literally go to bed every night, think you have it solved for now, wake up in the morning, open your computer, and because it's always noon somewhere else in the world, you'd realize that everything you thought you solved is, you know, it's like a big Jenga puzzle, and somebody pull a log out and the whole thing would come down. And virtually every day, I remember every night feeling like I had to give a pep talk to my team just because I knew they felt like I did, which is every time we thought we solved something, the next thing came that was even more challenging than the last. I would say in the last 30 days, it's become a little bit more, I wouldn't say calm. There's no such thing as calm in COVID, but I think we all sort of know what we're dealing with now. We've got our hands around. Back then, when you're trying to build a schedule and trying to think how to get playing again, we really didn't have our head around what testing was available, when was it going to be available, how would we test, what would our partners be in terms of contact tracing, and how do we make sure that we could keep our tour and our staff safe. I mean, it was a lot of guessing in the early days. Now, having watched so many other tours and other sports get ready and us being able to share those information, I mean, now we have choices in terms of how we were going to test and different, different third party resources. A lot of we've added 5 or 6 new sponsors to the LPGA that are all part of our new safety protocol sponsors. So, you know, what felt pretty lonely back in March and maybe April, now it feels like you got a pretty, like, I feel like I got a pretty good team around. I mean, every time I have a medical question, there's 10 different people I can ask, including 10 different other sports that have probably asked the same question. And in one of the best things I think have come out of this is, I said many times, my last decade here as commissioner has really been a time of collaboration and coordination on golf. I mean, the way the PGA Tour gets along with the LPGA, gets along with the European Tour, the RNA, you know, European Tour, USGA, et cetera, we all are pretty close anyway. I think the Olympics really helped bring us together. But thankfully, because of that Olympic bind that brought us together, you know, back in 2009, 2010, this virus really put that to the test. And from the very beginning, we've all been working on this together. I probably had as many calls with Keith Pelley at the European Tour as I've had with my own board in the last 60 days, just because we have so much in common. Players from all over the world, tournaments located on all over the world, testing challenges that are different in every country. I've said this many times, but a lot of people think you figure out coronavirus testing in a protocol and then you go apply it to 19 tournaments. But in my world, every state is different. Every county of every state is different. And trust me when I say every country is completely different. So you might have figured out how to play golf in Northwest Ohio, but that doesn't mean you've got a solution for Scotland. And because you have a solution for Scotland, doesn't mean you have a solution for Naples, Florida. So virtually every tournament is a renewed effort in explaining your protocol and then adjusting based on what the local government and health community requires.
Yeah, Mike, I was going to say, you didn't necessarily set yourself up easy to start. I mean, you guys go Ohio, fly a charter to Scotland, and then you're back stateside, I think, in Arkansas. Those are your first 3 weeks of returning the LPGA Tour. You know, you could have just done three in Ohio. That apparently worked well for the PGA Tour. Just go back-to-back at the same golf course.
Yeah, I've said this many times, but pre-coronavirus, overwhelmingly our best competitive advantage and asset in the world of sports is the global nature of us. You know, we're televised in 175 countries every week. I have players from 50 different countries. We play in 17 different countries. I mean, that is what makes the LPGA. That is, before coronavirus, that is the typical reason other sports would call us. How'd you get so global? What were the challenges to get there? Because most sports are pretty proud of their home region, but they really want to have the world pay attention. They really want to sell their TV rights all over the world. They really want to encourage growth for their sport in all corners of the world. We've been really proud of the fact that we're ahead of the curve of most sports on that angle, but add a virus to the mix where it's virtually different than every country and everybody has their own way of sort of attacking it. And being global isn't so great in 2020, but I'm quite certain when the virus is behind us, once again, you know, being global and having such an international footprint will be our advantage. But that's the schedule we build. That's the commitment we make to grow women's golf around the world. So yeah, right from the beginning, we'll play two in Ohio, which is nice. The players can come in, get one hotel room, you know, one rental car. We'll play Inverness the first week and the Marathon Classic over at Highland Meadows the next week. But after that, yeah, the world of the LPGA as we know it, which is planes, trains, and automobiles, is in play and makes battling a virus even more challenging.
I think one of the reasons that people just like you so much in particular in terms of a commissioner is, you know, you're not scared to be brutally honest. I read a Ron Cyrak article and you said, you know, we're probably going to cancel more tournaments coming up. It's just part. It's a nature of the beast. That's what we're going to have to deal with. But I read this quote from you and I just loved it. I just thought it was great perspective. You said in that Sports Business Journal article, you said, quote, "We view the decision to resume play as a responsibility, not a race." And I just felt like if I was a player playing under your tour, I would feel like you were looking out for us. And that through a quote like that, it just seems like, you know, the most important thing here is keeping everybody safe and everybody comfortable and feeling like it's going to continue. And that has been your goal this whole time.
You know, I'd love to lie to you, Shane, and say that perspective, that bigger picture perspective is built in me and it was part of my DNA. But the real truth of the matter is when this all started and we did come to a stop and everybody was at home, I'd probably talk to 15 or 20, maybe 30 players a day from all over the world. I mean, just whatever their concerns were, their thoughts. And I would just call some people sometimes because I'm an extrovert and I don't like working in my den by myself all day. So, and I remember hanging up the phone and I have these notes I always take. My team probably makes fun of me, but every time I want to call, I'm making just a bunch of one word notes for things people said. And I'd look at these notes at the end of the day from all these player conversations. And almost all of them were safe, slow, be sure. I mean, my players were saying to me, listen, Mike, I know you. I know you're a competitive guy. I know that, you know, watching this season and the schedule go away has got to be tough. And so I'm sure you're doing everything you can to get us back out there. And then it would always flip the conversation. But on behalf of me and a bunch of my friends, you know, this is not something you need to, you don't have to prove this to us. Get us back out there when you think you can get us back out there. And it would always shift to, and I'd always hang up the phone and think, gosh, she's 24, she's 22, or that person's 31 I just talked to. I'm 55 and she's guiding me like my parents, you know, guide me. We're essentially saying, I know you're a competitive guy and I know you want to rush to get back up there. You're probably talking other sports and everybody's talking about how fast you can return. But I really felt like I gathered that perspective from my athletes, from my caddies, you know, from my staff, which was just, Mike, this is not them. Nobody's going to win in 2020. I remember one of my board members said, you realize, right, Mike, that no matter how good or how bad 2020 is, it's not what you envisioned. It's not what they envisioned. And nobody will look back at you and say, man, that 2020, that was a good year. So knowing that, knowing it's the year of the asterisks, don't mortgage the future to have a good 2020. And the point was made is, don't go back to all these sponsors who contractually have to play an event in 2020 and pull out some legal document and tell them what they do or don't have to do. This is a year that's uncomfortable for everybody, our athletes included. So let's make sure that when this is over, we don't have a 3 or 4 year lag effect on how 2020 really shut down the LPGA. So one of the things I would tell you from that perspective is no matter when coronavirus is in our rearview mirror, I have zero doubt that the future of the LPGA will actually be stronger than it was before we entered 2020, because the relationship we've built with our sponsors in a year in which they're uncomfortable and they're unsure. If somebody looks at me and says, Mike, I just can't get comfortable playing, we don't play. My players may not want to hear that. It's just a fact, because I'd rather be with that sponsor for the next 10 years than make them do something they're uncomfortable with in the next 10 weeks. It's just, you know, losing the war. So, yeah, I wish I had big picture, long-term, you know, grandfather-like perspective. I don't. I'm hyper and I'm aggressive and I'm competitive. But my athletes were smart enough to recognize that and coach me through it.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. You've been talking about your sponsors. I know that you're big, as you should be, on pumping up the sponsors in and around the LPGA. And you know, I'm a big LPGA Tour fan, so I'm happy to help. And I'm going to focus on one here, and then you can run with all the sponsors in the world you want to give some love to. I have another podcast I do called Get a Grip. I do it with Max Homa, the PGA Tour. And we've been pumping all year the Aon Risk Reward Challenge, because Max has been close to the lead. And we talk about it on every episode. We have a little bit of fun with it. And I found out that, first of all, one thing, if people don't know, that Aon does, which I think is very cool, is the prize on the LPGA Tour is the same as the prize on the PGA Tour. It's $1 million to the winner. What they've done differently this year with the LPGA and everything that's happened is they basically have given you guys that $1 million to split up in the purse. So all the players that make the cut that are going to make money that week and throughout the weeks get a little bit of the Aon money. That's cool. What else are sponsors doing for you guys? What else are you guys doing with sponsors that is very unique and very different than what you've done in the past, considering what's going on?
Yeah, Aon is a great example. I mean, it's funny. When I had my first conversation with Aon and I said, hey, would you consider, rather than me handing one player $1 million check this year, me handling all of our players a little bit of $1 million to help us get through 2020? And their answer was great, which was, we don't have a problem with that, Mike, but it's important to us. We treat the men and the women the same. And the men are going to have $1 million winner this year. So it's uncomfortable not to have a women's winner. And I thought that was a great answer. Like, I mean, I love the fact that they didn't want to look like they were offering less when they weren't. And I said, well, difference. I mean, the PGA Tour has a wraparound season. They're much farther into their season ending. We've played 4 events, you know, so we're not, 2020 isn't in the books. And I said, you know, if that $1 million can help everybody get playing. So this first event we're playing, the Drive On Championship at Inverness, is really funded by people like Aon and other tournaments that didn't play this year, that actually said to us, I'm not going to play this year, but here's some money. Please make sure you use this to help the athletes get through a tough year. So whether you're talking about CP up in Canada, whether we're talking about Meyer, Dow, these are all people that couldn't play their event this year for whatever virus impacted reason. but still said to us on the way out, by the way, all of those sponsors, including AM that I've mentioned, in the midst of 2020, extended their agreement with the LPGA. I tell the players all the time, the coolest thing about dealing with a virus is when somebody on the other end of the phone says, Mike, this just can't work for me, and here's the reasons why. But I want you to know, and I want your athletes to know, I'm not going anywhere. And if you want to extend our deal longer, write it up and send it to me. I don't think I know a sponsor who isn't playing this year who hasn't already extended their deal longer than however it was before. So I think that's kind of the coolest thing about, you know, what's happening this year. The other thing on the sponsor front is, you know, we had partnerships with companies like NEC, a big electronics company, and we did all kinds of things together with NEC, shot tracers and that kind of stuff, things that were pretty golf. But when you get into a pandemic, we reached out to NEC and said, hey, can you help us through? And so NEC has given us essentially these mountable iPads that a player walks up, looks at the iPad, it recognizes who she is, takes her temperature without touching anybody or anything, and makes sure that she's okay to walk into player dining or the locker room, wherever else she's moving. We have them now in our offices at the LPGA headquarters as well, where they were just a partner for us in other kinds of technology, but in this kind of moment. And you know, that list goes on. And, you know, Cambia is our title sponsor in Portland, has been for many years, but as a healthcare company, they came to us and said, how can we help? And now they're the official mask and sanitizing provider to the LPGA. Everybody's going to be wearing a Cambia mask when we return. Again, good partners anyway, but great partners in the middle of a real crisis.
So what will you do with the LPGA Tour that is the same as what the PGA Tour has done throughout the last 6-7 weeks of returning to play? And what are you guys going to do that is different than what we've seen with the PGA Tour?
I think from an outsider perspective, you'll probably see more of the same. I think if you're a little closer to it, you'd recognize differences. So outside-wise, very similarly, no one's really going to play their way off the tour in 2020. So my athletes know that no matter how much or how little you play this year, Symetra Tour, LET, LPJ, any of our tours, your spot that you had when 2020 began is your spot in 21. And so what I've said to players from the very beginning is, I am not going to be the guy that creates a disincentive if you want to stay home this year. If you don't want to fly around the world, if this isn't for you, if you live with a 80-year-old relative and this just, you know, this scares you on all kinds of fronts, stay home, don't need you, doesn't affect your career, there'll be no Q school, we're not repopulating our tours. So I think that's pretty similar. And I know from talking to Jay and certainly Keith, that that's a pretty similar statement where we're, you know, if you skip this year, you're not usually in golf, unlike, you know, basketball, football, we have a 5-year deal and a 3-year no trade clause. And golf, you got to play every year to keep your spot next year. We've eliminated that stress. Similarly, we'll be doing a lot of testing, although our testing approach and our testing partners are different. So in our case, we're doing saliva testing. You know, you kind of spit in the tube, you send that tube in the next morning, you know, we get your results back. There's some pros and cons to both kinds of testing, but you know, everybody kind of had to find their own testing partner as it relates to playing. We're going to try in our first 7 events. I think we have 1 pro-am. We're going to try a pro-am. We're going to test all the participants in the pro-am. I think if we feel like we can, you know, most of my players, quite frankly, most of my staff is playing a lot of golf right now. And they're playing with other people. So most people feel pretty comfortable and safe to play golf outside with social distancing, et cetera. And obviously, as you know, Shane, you know, pro-ams are key to our business model at the LPGA. We're not going to play many when we get started, but we want to figure that out. So with Marathon, we're going to do a pro-am. We're going to test all the participants. And then hopefully, you know, that's something we can get back to in a little bit greater degree in the fall. In the short term, no fans, no pro-am. And I think it's 6 of our 7 first events. But like I said, I think if you're watching on TV, you'll see a lot of similarities. I think if you're probably in the bubble with us, you'd say there's some things we do different than the PGA Tour and vice versa. Exactly how we'll handle a positive case or contact tracing will be consistent, but not identical. And that's neither is right nor wrong. It's just everybody's got a slightly different philosophy on how we handle those situations.
How have you? I mean, you said it. You said you wake up every morning, and I can only imagine the phone check, you know, in bed, you look at the phone, look at your emails. All right, I got to get my day going. Let's see what we've got to tackle today. What have you done to kind of get away from it? How have you been able to distance yourself from this at times and just be a sane human being? Because I can imagine if you've been dealing with this since January, it can be massively overwhelming to the point where most of us who are dealing with this for our families, our jobs, things like that, you know, we don't have a whole tour to deal with. So how have you been able to step away? What have you done to just get away and clear your mind?
You know, it's funny. I've got a 23, 25, and 26-year-old son, all of which were gone in different cities and different places before coronavirus, and all of which probably thought next time they'd see dad would be Christmas or Thanksgiving. and all have been home since the middle of March. So, which has been the greatest gift for me and probably the biggest nightmare for them, you know. So, you know, one came back from University of Virginia, one had just graduated from Notre Dame and, you know, was in the middle of kind of job interview process. One's a lawyer up in Atlanta, but they're all back here because all their places are closed too. So as my wife will chuckle sometimes, and I can be as stressed as I want to be, but if I walk out, you know, if I walk out at breakfast and there's 320 somethings having breakfast arguing about, you know, whatever they argue about, but I promise you they're arguing about something. It's hard not to just, you know, it's hard not to just get out of the moment for a second. We live, like most Floridians, I live on a golf course, so I can kind of walk through the trees in my backyard and be on the 6th tee and just, you know, play nine holes or something. So I would tell you, I've played more golf. It's funny, I play golf about 7 o'clock at night because the golf course here is pretty crowded. And my day doesn't really slow down until about then, but at 7 o'clock, from 7 to 8:30 at night, we'll go out there, me and the boys, sometimes take a new puppy, which also threw a bunch of inability to kind of stay mad too long. So yeah, I mean, golf in a weird way has kind of helped me. I haven't played as much golf as commissioner as I probably thought I would, but this year has been a little different, and having the whole family home just adds perspective, to be honest with you, just when you need it, you know, because, you know, maybe my problems aren't the biggest problems in the world and they don't really care, you know, what dad's stressed over. You know, they just want to beat you in ping pong.
Yeah, beat you in ping pong or take it down on the golf course. It's interesting, you know, the first month of, you know, the stay-at-home order. I live in Arizona and I have a 1-year-old, so it's our first kid, and my wife sent me a message. It'd been a couple days and he'd been going through a leap week and he was pretty fussy. And my wife sent me one of those Instagram, you know, feel good story things from somebody that said, you know, if somebody would give me a time machine, this is from an older mom. And it said, if somebody had given me a time machine and I could go back and be stuck at home with my 1 or 2 year old, you know, there's no money in the world that I wouldn't pay for that moment. And it reminds you that while there, if you can perspective wise, look at all the negatives that are happening with all of this, and find a silver lining, like a chance to hang out with your 3 boys, which, as you said, the last place they want to be is home. For goodness sakes, they're in their 20s. You know, they want to be, right. You know, being out, seeing the world. I mean, that is something that you'll remember for the rest of your lives. And it's, again, it's nice to remind yourself sometime that there is something somehow positive in all of this craziness that's gone down in 2020.
Yeah, I have a title sponsor who's also a very good personal friend. And he made a comment to me, this is back in March, and he said, I believe every once in a while God does something that forces you to remember what's really important in life. I hope it's not a virus, because the virus was brand new at the time. But he said, I don't know about you, but in the last 30 days, I really got reconnected with what's really important in life. And I said, it's funny you say that, because, I mean, it's, you know, my life can be pretty, I guess it's unfair to say out of my control, because it really is in my control. I just don't control it. But when you're playing in 17 countries and, you know, 35 different weeks a year. And then at the same time, you know, you're really trying to secure all the business you need for future years. You got 2,000 teachers from all over the world. I'm never comfortable being here, meaning home. I always feel like I should be somewhere else representing the brand and the tour and doing, you know, doing what I'm paid to get done. So after 10 years of doing it, like, it's physically demanding. It's a little mentally demanding, but more importantly, it's just a significant guilt ride. You know, you say to yourself all the time, this is important. I think my kids are watching. They see dad doing something he loves and really cares about. My wife, God love her, has put up with a guy who's way too hyper about his work his whole life. But, but I mean, the guilt factor is usually pretty high. You know, you're trying to FaceTime, you know, a good night with your wife. You're sending text messages to your boys and you're telling yourself, I'm still a good dad. You know, I remember to text him tonight, but that's not the same. So yeah, in a strange way, I mean, it's really at a really key point in my career. It's really helped the guilt factor. And like I said, a dad who thought probably his quality time with his kids was over. I got this sort of 6-month gift and it's been pretty nice.
Who wins between you and the 3 boys on the golf course?
Oh, golf-wise, dad wins every time.
Every
almost
time.
Every other sport. Well, I mean, I take my game a lot more serious than, you know, than three recent college kids. But almost any other sport that I could usually have crushed them when they were kids. Like we play pool basketball, which is in our family is full contact. There's no fouls. And, you know, when they were 14 and they were afraid to go up against dad, I could win those all the time. Right now, as my wife would say, you play pool basketball one more time and I'm losing because the kids beat me senseless and I'm not smart enough to stop. But yeah, any other sport they win. Golf is my last holdout.
If I'm on Getty Images in a couple of weeks and I see you in a sling, I'm going to know what happened to you. It would have been going for the dunk and getting rejected. I got just a couple more. One thing, I mean, you know, we talked a lot about coronavirus and everything that's going on in terms of returning. You know, the other thing that's happened in this country is a huge movement for social justice. And I've always felt like LPGA players have been more vocal than other people in golf. They've done an unbelievable job of speaking up and just not being scared of saying and talking about what they want to talk about. What do you say to players that come to you during this and just ask you for advice on how to approach it and what to say and how to speak on an issue that, you know, can be polarizing, it can touch people, you know, certain ways, and it can be something that maybe at times has made people uncomfortable to talk about?
You know, Shane, the greatest eye-opening experience for me as commissioner of the LPGA from the minute I got here was been that I spend my life around some of the greatest athletes in the world that all are completely used to being the underdog and being sort of underappreciated
their right.
whole life. If you're a great female golfer and you're 14 years old at your club, try to go schedule an 8:15 tee time on Saturday. See how many people will give you that spot or let you walk on or get a rain spot at 9 o'clock on a Sunday, even though you're probably better than 99.9% of the people, if not all, on that range. So, and they come from all over the world. If you're a great golfer from Thailand and you got great 15 years ago, you probably didn't see a lot of other women playing golf when you did, and fill in any country in that blank. So what I'm really impressed by, these women from a long time have understood how it feels to be different, how it feels to sort of be downcast, and how it feels that a lot of people kind of vote against you and not be able to see yourself when you were a kid at some greater stage. They're, you know, we're still growing women's sports. And for a lot of these young kids, like I said, if you're a young girl growing up in Taiwan and you wanted to see another professional female golfer in Taiwan, well, you probably had to wait till Yanni Sen came along, because before that, there wasn't anybody
right.
to look at. There wasn't any trailblazers to follow. So it's already, I would say it's already in the LPGA's DNA, and the Black Lives Matter sort of an awakening, if you will, to this has been harder for others than you probably realize is I literally could put any player in that sentence and say, if you think it's easy to become a professional female golfer in any country, certainly in America, you're wrong. It's just not easy yet. To your point about what do I say when people come to me for advice, if I'm being honest with you, I've gone the other direction. We've done four or five video conference now with black golfers that play on the LPGA, the Symmetra Tour, the LET. And quite frankly, just to get talking and listening, you know, we
right.
wanted to learn. You know, I knew there were stories there I probably didn't know. And so one, you just want to get in touch with that. Two is we wanted to say, you know, what are we missing?
Yep.
You know, because we clearly are missing things. Nobody's trying to be dismissive, but I'm sure there's times, you know, when we have them. And I would tell you, there's been some moments where you hang up the phone and you think, gosh, how did I not, you know, how did I not see that? How
right.
did I not learn? And I think there's a real responsibility that our athletes feel that as a guy, I can tell you, I played football, basketball, baseball growing up. I never worried about the future of my sport. I never thought as a football player, I had a responsibility to leave football better for my sons, because football was going to be there. And if my sons were good at it, they could pursue it. But meet a woman on the LPGA and get her talking about, you know, the future of the game and what she wants to do to make sure young girls have a better shot than she did. It's virtually 100%. So it's built right in them. It's why we talk about drive on. They're all about, you know, driving on to leave the game better. So to me, Black Lives Matter fits right into our DNA.
And yep.
I remember the first time Renee Powell told me the story about trying to check into a hotel with the LPGA, and everybody had a reservation except Renee Powell's was mysteriously lost. And I think it was Kathy Whitworth who went over to the front desk and said, let me make sure you guys get this. Either she checks in or none of us check in. And they were all standing in the lobby with kind of a face off, and the hotel said, oh, there's your reservation. Mm-hmm. And that was 40 something years ago, which may seem pretty bold today, but it was unbelievable to think 40 years ago. So I don't think I have to do much teaching on Black Lives Matter. Like most white privileged leaders, I have to shut up on this topic and learn more than I try to teach.
Yeah, it's been amazing to listen. It's been an amazing time to, as you said, sit back and hear stories. I've been on a couple of Zoom calls with a lot of people in and around the golf world. And, you hear these things, you think this happened in 2018. It felt like it's a story from 1972 right. or 1955 or 1931. You can't believe that it was 2 years ago, and it open drives even more. I mean, even if your eyes have been open, it really will shock you back. And I thought it was a great point you made about the LPGA players, being underdogs and always taking that role and fighting for it. It's an impressive thing, and the players should be proud of the way they are, in and around this. And before you said in that Sports Business Journal article, fewer than 7% of corporate sponsorships worldwide focus on women's sports. And that's nearly 85% of fans would be interested in watching women's sports. That is, again, another issue that you face is you go to sponsors and go to companies and go, listen, this is an amazing product. All you got to do is trust me here. I mean, I feel like that's probably a battle you have to face a lot.
Yeah, if I was being honest, probably more honest than I should be on a podcast. But I mean, one of the things that disappointed me in my, my first 5 or 6 years is I'd walk into these companies. And before we'd walk in to see the CEO or the board or the CMO, you'd usually go by the, whatever their executive floor is, and they're hanging on the wall somewhere, and there would be our corporate values, our ethics, and I'd always talk about equality and treating everybody the same and making sure that, our commitment to women and men is the same. And, it's always the same thing written in a different way.
Right.
And I remember sitting across from one CEO, and I said, I got to be honest with you, I read your values before I walked in here, and I get your values, but you realize that 99.9% of the $300 million you guys spend in consumer marketing and sponsorship is on men's activities, 100% of men's activities. And I'm sure you can talk to me about reach and GRP and viewership numbers. I get all that. But it's either your values or it's not. Like, if your values is to send a message that equality is the core of what we do, because that's what I think of a value. Value is at the core. Then you can't just make that about what goes inside the building with 50,000 employees. You got to talk about what you're doing with $300 million to affect 55 million viewership. And the exciting piece is in the last 4 or 5 years, that shift is happening. I can't tell you how many customers I'll talk to now who will say, our spending portfolio is out of whack and it's got to look more like what we believe as a company. That's a home run idea for women's sports. And it's just now kind of becoming part of the vernacular. I think what people are starting to realize, we can't talk about equality and diversity and inclusion the way we do and spend our money in a completely different way. I've said this many times. I mean, I get the argument. I was a sponsor my whole life. You can talk to me about the PGA Tour having 5 times our viewership or what the NBA delivers versus WNBA. I get that. I get all of that. But, Title IX didn't happen because there was a vast change in viewership. People just finally realize that telling young girls that they should think about professional sports just like young boys, but your opportunity is about 1/10 the size as your brothers, was just a BS answer. Like, at some point that just became an unacceptable thing, and we made change. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think at some point shareholders are going to say to boards of directors and leaders of companies, don't call it our value if it doesn't affect the decisions we make on how we spend our money.
Mike, I have either a good idea or a dumb idea. I'm going to let you decide. Is that okay?
Okay. I'm not sure I'm the right gauge. Heard me talk for a while. I'm not sure I know the difference myself.
Listen, you've got your notepad there. You got your pen. It probably hadn't seen much action during the podcast, but I'm throwing this your way. You already mentioned that you have a new puppy. Is that right?
Yes. Well, my wife does. I must have agreed to that when listen, I wasn't paying attention.
Hey, listen, it's yours too, man. It's in the house. It's your dog as well. There's no barriers to keep that thing away from you. So one thing I've noticed from my LPGA friends is it seems like a lot of the players on your tour travel with their dogs. Is that fair?
That is fair, yeah.
Okay. So since we don't have fans, here's my idea. You should have, at these golf events, a designated dog area. You could get it fenced in. You could set up kind of a steady cam, like a GoPro, or put one on the dog. I mean, feels kind of dog, you know, the doggy bowl. What do they call puppy bowl? Is that what it's called? And
yeah,
you could have, it'd be an easy cut in for the broadcast. Hey, let's go check in on the dogs for 2 seconds, for 5 seconds, whatever. Everybody loves dogs, and especially on a golf course. And you could even have, occasionally, you could have a little video where, you know, Morgan Pressel's with their dog, explaining who it is and the breed and how long and what they like to do. And there you go. So A, everybody watching gets a chance to see puppies, which is a big bonus and a win. And second, the dogs don't have to stay in the hotel all the time, and they get to be maybe off of a fairway on 14. And I bet the players would like it because they get to walk by their puppy all the time. You're welcome for the idea of the dog cam on the LPGA.
Well, it's probably a dumb idea. The reason I know that is because it's something a couple of years ago, I went to Purina and pitched the same thing. I said, hey, listen, it would be really cool for you guys to be the official dog partner of the LPGA. As you probably know, we have traveling daycare on the LPGA. Most sports, you know, kind of scratch ahead and go, traveling daycare? Well, we've had traveling daycare since 1995. I don't want an athlete to make it to the pinnacle of her career and have to choose between being a mom or playing. I want the answer to be yes. And Smucker's is the official sponsor of our traveling daycare with peanut butter and jelly and with peanut butter and the whole deal. So I've loved that sponsorship from the beginning. And so I didn't succeed with Purina, but I think maybe listening to you, maybe it's time for me to go back and make another run at that. You mentioned Morgan Pressel. Morgan's the culprit of my current dog. So Morgan and my wife are good friends. And I don't remember where we were. It might've been Evian or something. My wife sat next to Morgan at some pro-am dinner. And that night, I remember I was sleeping in bed and I woke up and my wife was looking at pictures on her phone. I mean, for most guys, that would be scary that, you know, your wife is looking at pictures late at night, but she was looking at pictures of dogs because Morgan had shared with her the idea of a Labradoodle. And that was the beginning of the end for me in winning the no dog fight.
It's sad. This is sad. I know the name of Morgan Pressel's dog. That is how important that dog is in Morgan's life. Zoe is awesome. Now, I've got a chance to spend a little bit of time with that dog, and that dog is worth all of the fanfare that comes with. A last question for you, and then I'll let you go, and I appreciate the time. You were a caddy back in your younger days. You caddied, and the more I run into people that caddied, the more I think about how important it is in terms of developmental at an early stage. What do you remember about life as a looper? And do you feel like it was important for you to kind of see that world early in your life?
You know, your description was so good. I should probably just leave this alone because that makes me sound better than I was. I was a horrendous caddy. I mean, as you can tell from this podcast, I talk too much. I talk too fast. I walk too fast. There was nothing about Mike 1 at 13 that made him caddy material. The best thing that happened for me is I caddied for a summer. Hated it from the beginning to the end, but my dad told me, you know, you said you were going to be a caddy, so you're going to caddy all summer. So you had to do two every Saturday and Sunday. You had to do a bag in the morning and a bag in the afternoon. And to me, watching somebody else play sports when you're young was just never. But I met the greenskeeper in the middle of that first year, and he said to me, hey, if you come back next summer, I'll hire you. And I was thinking greenskeeper, like cutting fairways and greens. And those guys look really cool. You know, they're riding in golf carts while I'm walking down the fairway with two bags on my shoulder. And so I did, but he had this term called bunker boys. And your first summer, you had to be a bunker boy, which means all you did was edge and weed bunkers for 3 months. If you did that for one summer, then next year he'd teach you the riding stuff. And in fairness, I made it through being a bunker boy for one summer and ended up working on a golf course on the grounds crew till the day I graduated college. So I've changed pins, cut fairways, cut roughs, built walls, repaved cart paths. So I know the golf course. It's always been a pretty comfortable place for me. And it's kind of funny. One night I was sitting out on a little 18th patio in a corporate sponsor's deck. It was in Phoenix. It was just me sitting there. One of our rules officials came by. It was like 8 o'clock at night. I'm like, what are you doing? And I said, I know this sounds really strange, but this time of night when they come out and they put sand in all the divots and they essentially take a golf course and got beat up all day and make it beautiful again is my favorite time of the day on a golf course. So I was just sitting there watching the transformation happen. And it's really exciting to watch it when you're actually not the one having to do it like I did when I was a kid. So
a little more fun. And when you're not filling the divots. It's a little
so not a good caddy, but it got me to a really good life in terms of loving this game.
Mike, all right. Well, I appreciate the time. If you have anything else before we go that you just want to share, I'll give you the floor just on the week and the coming weeks and everything that we should see and expect to see with the LPGA Tour's return.
Well, just know that we're going to get right off the bat with two and two in Ohio between Marathon bringing us back and this drive-on championship at Inverness. And then I really, you know, hats off to ASI and AIG, the two companies that will bring us out to the Ladies Scottish, and then us being able to play the Women's Open Championship. I mean, it would have been really easy for Scotland to say, we just can't do it this year. And between what they've done, the way the Scottish government and the UK government have embraced our testing protocols to let our players come back, it's not easy to cross a border in a state right now. It's certainly not easy to cross a country border. But I think in fairness, you know, our players are still looking at playing quite a few majors in 2020. And I'm not sure anybody felt comfortable saying that just 60 days ago. So it takes a village. And luckily for us, we've got some incredible partners, both on the tournament side and on the sponsorship side. And I'm hoping our fans have missed us as much as we've missed them.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's just one of my favorite sports organizations on the planet, and I root for the LPGA Tour each and every day and each and every week. So all the luck, and I know you'll do what you do. And so I'm excited to watch. I'm excited to see the LPGA players take on one of the best courses in the country, and then, you know, on we go. So appreciate the time. And good luck the rest of the year.
Thanks, Shane. Stay safe, buddy.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
A big thanks to Mike Wan for joining me, and just a little behind the curtains. I was having issues with my computer. Shocking, I know. I never have issues ever with Wi-Fi or figuring out how to post an Instagram Live. I'm, you know, this is the year, I believe, that I've kind of started to lose the ability to be on top of all the technological stuff. There's things that are shown online and I don't really know what it is. There's apps that people use. I don't even have them on my phone. I'm over the peak, man. I'm old. I'm old at 36. It's official. This is the year. But Mike was patient and waited around for 50 minutes. So that's the kind of guy he is. You know, he could have just told me we'll do it another time, and he didn't. So a big thanks to Mike for not just joining me, but for you know, dealing with my incompetence when it comes to how to record a podcast that I've only been doing for 5 years. So a big thanks to Mike. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back on Thursday with the Korda Sisters. And that is that. Hope you guys are staying safe. Hope you get out there and play a little bit of golf. We'll check back a little later this week. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.